Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the First Parish Church of Stow and Acton. My name is Anne Sadler and I serve on the Board of Trustees. And I'm a regular at the 9 o'clock service, but I thought I'd volunteer for the 11 this morning and see how the other half lives. Coffee hour follows the service in Fellowship Hall. Exit through the door to my left. Follow the hallway to the end and signs will direct you. To those who are guests with us this morning, we're very glad that you're here. In addition to our website and our Facebook page, information about First Parish and about Unitarian Universalism is available on the Church Life table in Fellowship Hall. Childcare is available during the service on the lower level of Fellowship Hall, and an usher can assist you in finding the way. And finally, the order of service includes information about Generosity Sunday on February the 4th and gives lots of good reasons to help with the FPC auction, which is coming up in April.
Where to begin? With thanks for those who resist, those who make their voices heard. With hope for this world we share, fragile and resilient as we ourselves can be. Where to begin? With sorrow for all the harm and all the pain. With ourselves, just as we are. We make of this place and of this time something holy, something precious. Welcome in. Settle in. Join in. It is by one another's presence here that we are blessed. Our opening hymn is Wake Now My Senses, number 298 in the Gray Hymnal.
Thank you.
is the spirit of this church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to speak the truth in love, and to help one another.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michelle.
So this part of the service is called Message for All Ages, and often my message is for younger kids. And as a bonus, the other people get to hear it. Today the message is more for middle schoolers and up, including adults. So one of the things we get challenged with all the time... Oh, wait. I have to start with my preview. So I'm going to... Rick, can you help me? All right. So he's going to hold a couple things up. And I'm going to hold one thing up. So if you can hold those up high. We have a whisk, a cookbook, and some gardening gloves. And I want to know what these three things have to do in common. Any ideas? It's a stretch, but they all have something in common. A whisk, a book, and a pair of gardening gloves. Any ideas? What? They're all made by humans. That is, yes, but that's not where I'm going. Any other ideas? Theo?
They're all luxuries not everyone can have.
That's coming from City Reach. They're all luxuries that a lot of people don't have. That is true, but not where I'm going. One more guess. What do you think, Jolene? Things that people do for enjoyment. And Jolene was here at the first service, so I should not have called on her. Yeah. But that is true. Things that people do for enjoyment. And these are from my family. And my daughter... Alana is an amazing cook, and when she gets stressed, she'll just decide, I'm going to cook. Our benefit, definitely, and it also benefits her. And I still don't quite understand this, says that gardening is relaxing. I've never understood that. For me, it's my go-to relaxation thing is reading. I love to read. However, our family, much like many people, have the to-do list, the should list. I should do this. I should do that. I must do this. I must do that. And we don't always take the time to do the self-care and do the gardening or the cooking or the reading because there's the to-do list. In particular, I've seen this from my daughter and her friends lately. She's in the middle of doing finals and midterms at her high school. And just this endless pressure of, I should study, I should study, I should study. After a while, if you don't stop and take care of yourself in middle school and high school, you're going to start just hating everything there is to do with school. The same for us as adults. If we don't occasionally give ourselves time to just take care of ourselves, to slow down, to say it is okay to let the dishes go or the laundry go or the endless list go and spend a half hour reading or spend some time gardening or spend some time cooking, then we end up just not enjoying anything in our lives. And we all hear this message constantly. How many times have you heard this message before? We all hear this message. You have to care for yourselves. And it is, it's to me, it's just as important as eating well or exercising or sleeping. Taking care for yourself and doing something that fills you, that makes you feel full, is so important. And so I'm going to encourage you all at least one time this week to find a half hour to spend something, some time, just doing something that makes you feel happy that is not video or TV based. And that's for me, well, because it's easy to just sit down and watch a TV and I could easily be reading a book. All right, so thank you. Enjoy your week. We forgot to light a candle for the Patriots, so I'm putting a plug for them. And today... today, Sophia is going to help us carry our lantern and our light from our chalice to our religious education program.
Please join me in the spirit of prayer. To all that is chaotic in you, let there come silence. Let there be a stilling of the voices that have laid their claim on you, that have made their home in you, but will not let you rest, will not let you hear your life with wholeness or feel the grace that fashioned you. Let what distracts you cease. Let what divides you cease. Let there come an end to what diminishes and demeans. Let there be an opening into the quiet that lies beneath the chaos, where you find the peace you did not think possible, and where you can see what shimmers within the storm. Outrageous love, now more than ever, we know the need of your steady presence. Be with us, whether we know you in the moment or not, for we need both outrage and love. A year ago today, many thousands took to the streets for women's marches in cities around the world. Among those gathered in Washington, D.C., was a small group of women brought together by a song. Written a year earlier by Connie Lim, whose artist name is Milk, M-I-L-C-K, the song she called Quiet gives voice to pain and trauma she suffered in an abusive relationship and is a commentary more broadly on the oppression of women. After the 2016 presidential election, Lim found another purpose for her song. She recomposed it for a cappella singing, and by way of social media, she recruited women from around the country, women she would not meet face-to-face until they arrived in D.C. for the march. She recruited them to perform the song with her on that day. We're about to see a video of one of the performances of I Can't Keep Quiet. Today, we honor all those women who can't keep quiet. And there are many. On that day, on the day before that march, and since, in marches taking place yesterday, including the Hardy Band in Air yesterday, there are voices of hashtag Me Too, hashtag Time's Up, voices of women organizing, voices of women elected to and running for office, and voices who have not been and will not be quiet, including those here. This is I Can't Keep Quiet. It's all right.
If I don't say something, if I just lie still, could I be a monster, scare them all away? If I let them hear what I have to say, I can't keep quiet.
No, I won't keep quiet. Millions in the streets last year, the day after the president's inaugural address, and this year, the day after the government shut down, staking a claim to resistance, a claim against hate, violence, disrespect, greed, and arrogance, refusing to be silent about injustice of any kind. It hurts all of us. And refusing to be silent about justice of every kind, it matters for all of us. This kind of intersectionality, this intertwining of injustice and of justice and of our lives is not new. It is complex. It can be hard work. But it is not new. Remember King's letter from Birmingham jail. All life is interrelated, an inescapable network of mutuality, a single garment of destiny. In his book, Between the World and Me, Ta-Nehisi Coates says to his 15-year-old son, "This is your country. This is your world. This is your body. And you must find some way to live within the all of it." Sometimes the pieces seem not to fit. Mutuality, destiny, country, world, body, the all of it. And we must find some way to live within the all. So let's start with this. The statement of principles, the covenant of faith guiding Unitarian Universalist congregations, begins with respect and ends with interdependence. In between those two things is guidance for how we should live toward those goals, toward that all of it. In between them is the affirmation and promotion of acceptance of one another, affirmation and promotion of justice, of equity, of compassion, of the rights of conscience, of peace, liberty, and justice for all. Let these words rest with you for a moment. Let them shimmer beneath the storms of politics. These words know no limits of ethnic or cultural identity, of gender or class identity, of national or religious identity. These are the truths that we hold and that guide us to be the best we can possibly be. In the winter 2016 UU World magazine, there was a painting included. The magazine's editor, Chris Walton, thanked Lena Gardner for bringing the painting to his attention from her Facebook page. It's called Romantic Picnic for Three. The artist is Brittany Leanne Williams. This is her painting. Look closely. Can you see three? Look closely at the top of the tree trunk, a little bit to the front, on the right. you will see the legs and feet of a black man. Romantic picnic for three. This is one in a series of nine paintings called Leisure and the Unseen. They show a dissonance between affluent white communities, where leisure and privilege seem worlds removed from the artist's own experience of blackness, and from urgent conversations within black communities. Williams says that her work reveals the act of not seeing. She says she is placing what she sees in the same two-dimensional plane as what isn't seen, and by that act, creating a sharp edge that slices through leisure and privilege. Lena Gardner, who posted this painting on her Facebook page and is now the executive director of Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism, is one who, like this artist, can't keep quiet. She has helped mobilize protests against police brutality in the Twin Cities, where activists have faced a variety of threats. Gardner says it is, quote, the ongoing exposure to story after story, video after video of police brutality that really takes a toll. The painting is, she says, particularly poignant and heart-wrenching because many days this is what fighting institutional racism feels like. Like white folks are just walking around, like everything is okay. Seeing the unseen is made harder by gaslighting, by so-called fake news, by diversion, when not normal wears the cloak of the way it is. We can help each other see the unseen and notice the hidden when we are not quiet. A year ago, and this weekend, and plenty of days in between, urgency called people to the streets. Urgency brought on by anger, fear, feeling under a threat, being attacked, feeling vulnerable or vulnerable again, an urgency brought on by love. This urgency feels new to some of us, and feels new to some of us in this current guise. But for others, it's been known close up and personal for generations, no matter the shape of it or the face of it. Romantic Picnic for Three reminds us of decades of urgency. As Ta-Nehisi Coates told his son, in America, it is traditional to destroy the black body. Yes, and to control the female body, and to do harm to bodies perceived as different from some normal that we pretend to live by. As Black Lives of UU leader Lena Gardner said of the painting, folks are just walking around like everything is okay. Everything is not okay. Not for people of color, not for immigrants, not for Muslims in this country, not for LGBTQI people, not for people who are poor, not for women, and not for our children. Not okay. In Langston Hughes' poem entitled Democracy, which was published in 1949, he wrote, "I tire so of hearing people say, 'Let things take their course, tomorrow is another day.' I do not need my freedom when I'm dead. I cannot live on tomorrow's bread." Many of us do not have the privilege of waiting. And those of us who do cannot keep quiet and wait. The deeper I go into my own white identity work, and the more often I find myself in gatherings with folks of many different identities, the more and more and more conscious I become of this business of interrupting, of how the more privileged still get heard, get credit, get the opportunity, get the benefit and the benefit of the doubt. There is something in this to be checked and to be challenged. These days, many communities are afraid and threatened. Harassment is on the rise. And when any of us are witnesses, bystanders to harassment, it is understandable that we turn away. We're afraid. We don't know what to do. We may be unable to take action that feels as if it would matter, and we may worry that if we act, it could cause more harm than offer help. The downside of turning away is in giving harm tacit approval. Sometimes, in these circumstances, interruption can prevent harm, can limit further harm from being done. Last Sunday, I ended my sermon with a confession. It was about the first days of my experience wearing a safety pin, a sign that the wearer is prepared to be an active bystander in a situation where someone is being harassed because of who they are. I thought I was prepared. I had a plan. Actually, I had several of them, of what to say and what to do, and even a plan for when not to intervene. On those first few days, as I walked around Jamaica Plain wearing my pen, I was paying attention. I was on high alert. I was being acutely watchful. As a woman, this is all familiar to me. And this time, that awareness was different in both degree and kind. It brought me to heart-sick exhaustion. As familiar as this was, and as aware as I believe I am, that safety pin forced me to see the unseen, to feel the urgency, and to at least be prepared to interrupt harm. I am, after all, white, and I need to learn to live with the all of it. Over 50 years ago, James Baldwin wrote The Fire Next Time. May his words become true for all of us. Baldwin wrote, "If we, some of the relatively conscious, who must, like lovers, insist on or create the consciousness of others. If we do not falter in our duty now, we may be able, handful that we are, to end the nightmare and achieve our country and change the history of the world. May it be so. Amen. Our closing hymn is My Life Flows On, number 108 in the Gray Hymnal. Our closing words this morning are from Adrienne Rich, one of those voices bringing the oppression of women and lesbians to the forefront. She writes, "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who age after age, perversely and with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world.